this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad you could join us on this Monday here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, some interesting interviews about interesting shows going on here on the program today. First, we're going to talk to our friends from the Kansas City Actors Theater, where they are doing A Moon for the Misbegotten, kind of a following of one of the characters in Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey Into Night. And we'll talk about the connections there. With us to tell us all about it, two of the performers in the show, Victor Rader Wexler, is with us, Mike. Once again. He plays the role of Philip Hogan, a salty Irish farmer. Probably a good character for you to play.
Well, I hope it will be. You know, it's a challenge, though, I'll say.
It is?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Because the language and the cadences are just very different than we're used to. He's a hard drinker and full of spit and swearing.
Yeah, is
we
that...
I gave you, just before we came in, my opening line about
sure.
who. We weren't sure if we could say it on the air if you wanted to, because it really describes the character, shall I say it?
Oh, go ahead.
So he comes in drunk in the middle of the night. And he's reeling around, and his opening line is, "Haroo, down with all tyrants, male and female, to hell with England, and goddamn Standard Oil." And that tells you what you need to know, I think.
It really does.
Hogan.
It tells you all about it. Victor, not surprised that Victor does a lot of character roles. Why, a wealth of experience. In fact, a few years back, did Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins at the J with Paul Mesner.
Several years in a row.
You were actually a puppet.
No, well, I was I was a puppeteer to start my career, actually.
Really?
And but in that show, for the most part, I was a live actor. But when needed, I also was a puppeteer.
Victor's credits, especially in television, are just immense here. Boy, Kate Nally, Crime Story, Wonder Years, Friends, Murder One, ER, Murder with Children, Darman Greg, Seinfeld. Oh, you remember his characters in Seinfeld, the doctor.
Well, now you're getting to the ones that are still on the air, like Seinfeld and Everybody right. Loves Raymond and King of Queens. They're still running. A lot of them are.
Oh, at any time in the evening, you'd probably turn on one of these, MeTV or Antenna TV, and you might see Victor on there.
I wake up in the middle of the night and there I am.
King of Queens. He was on that a lot. NYPD Blue, Sabrina, many others as well. With him, Ashley Pankow. She plays the role of Josie.
Hello.
Hi. His daughter in the show. Actress, singer, dancer, musician. She's performed with Actors Theater, at the New Theater, Starlight, Musical Theater Heritage, Quality Hill Playhouse, The Chestnut, has done national tours, regional theater, is well known for being a vocal coach as
mm-hmm,
well.
Mm-hmm. I try to use all the tricks of my trades to make some money.
That's what people do today. Thank you both
for
being
for
here
us.
And talking about it. A Moon for the Misbegotten. He takes... I should let one of you explain it, I suppose. He thought he was a little hard on his family in A Long Day's Journey Into Night and kind of wrote this to perhaps redeem his brother in some way.
Well, he wrote toward the end of his life a play called Long Day's Journey Into Night about his own family and his thoughts about them. And he was palsied at that time. He wrote by tiny, tiny, tiny little letters. He wrote this play that ran over 4 hours on 6 pages, and his wife would transcribe it. But he found it a very harsh examination of his mother, his father, his brother. And so he left in his will that it could not be ever done until after they were all dead. But that didn't happen because Carlotta Monterey, his wife, needed the money, and she got it on before. Who was still alive? I'm not sure, but before. Or maybe it was 20 years after they were all dead. Anyhow, it got on. And it became a big hit with Jason Robards, and that led people to want to look at things more. And this other play, The Moon for the Misbegotten, was the last play he ever wrote, and it had not a kinder look at his brother James, but a more introspective, more careful examination of this man and what drove him, because he died of alcoholism, and he had never come to much. He tried to follow his father, who was a great actor, into the theater and wound up mostly involved with prostitutes and alcohol and and the good life, the, you know, a Broadway dandy. And and Eugene wanted to look at it more carefully. And Eugene also had been tormented by him. So.
Sure.
So James comes back into a new play. But I don't think the new play is I think the new play is about Josie. That's what I think.
Oh.
Played by Ashley
that.
Here.
Yes.
So you have involvement
quite
with
a bit.
James. So
yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, so it turns out that her father and her have the farm, and they're tenants of James, Jim, and his father. And they've probably known each other a long time, and he always comes down and drops in. And they have
20 years
they've been on this farm. And she's not your typical dainty doll that he and she assumes everyone else would want. And he has a soft spot in his heart for her, as well as she does for him, but she would never admit it. But we got Dad over here who sees it and tries to bring these two together in a very roundabout, manipulative way.
From my point of view, at any rate, but I think she has a terrible self-image. So she sees herself in a not a very flattering way.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's one of the people who can't imagine herself in a good life. So she can't make things good for herself. That's how the father sees her.
Well, it doesn't help that, you know, her mother died when his youngest son was born. So she ended up raising her brothers and taking care of her father and running the farm as well. So without a mom in her life and a rough and tumble warm dad, you know, it kind of infects who she becomes and who she is and how she sees herself.
And the relationship between father and daughter, I think, is amazingly rich and often very, very funny because, you know, when they're Irish and there's a lot of alcohol involved and plotting and scheming and yelling and name-calling and it's very complicated, and I think Ashley's character may be as complicated as any I've ever read in theater. You know, it's very, very...
It's rich.
Rich and dense. And we're right in the middle of getting it open.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're just here. And, you know, just kind of anticipating what these audiences say to us.
Play opens on September 12th and runs through the 30th at the City Stage Theater at Union Station, the home, really, of Actors Theater now. The number to call for more information is 816-235-6222 or online at kcactors.org. Did O'Neill, this was about his brother, people think, was Ashley based on anyone he knew, not family, I realize. But what do you think, Ashley?
I mean, there were definitely tenants on their estate, on their land. As far as historically, I'm not quite sure.
There's an incident that's both spoken of in both Long Day's Journey and in this play, of the tenant farmer's pigs going out and wallowing in the millionaire neighbor's ice pond, in the mud in the ice pond. And I spent 8 years at the O'Neill Center in Waterford, Connecticut. And we were on the land that the pigs were on that went to the ice pond. So that really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And O'Neill being O'Neill, if she wasn't an actual person, it was probably somebody he knew about or thought about her. Because he lived there.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know the answer to that, if she's biographically. I've never seen anybody say she was. But she was somebody in his mind.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. Based on fixed characters, on people he knew. That's probably the easiest way to write, even if it's not exactly the person. Because you don't expect them to name the person. That would be too hard. And it would step on too many toes and hurt people's feelings. But you could base it on the concept of the person, of
mm-hmm.
course. Do you think...
In Long Day's Journey, interestingly, he gave himself his brother's name. He called himself in Long Day's Journey Edmund.
Uh-huh.
And Edmund was his younger brother who died. And he called the baby Eugene, so he switched their two names.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I don't think it was purposeless. I don't know exactly what the purpose was, but, you know, he just dug and dug and dug.
Ashley, do you think she is as complicated as Victor thinks she is?
Yes, and no. I also think she's just human. You know, in life, we are no one thing. You know what I mean? We have... and I think any woman can look at Josie and see her and go, oh, that's me. I get that. Of a self-image mm-hmm. problem of wanting love but knowing that you don't deserve it, but also needing to take care of others and putting others in front of yourself. I mean, when I read it, she flew off the page into me, and I was like, oh, I get exactly who it is. Now, the whole scheme and all how that works and how we portray that on stage, that's complicated. But it truly, on the page, it's so human. I can only hope we can make that come across.
Well, it sounds like it would be a very complicated player to play, but you said you jumped right into it, so obviously you connected there.
Well, yeah. I mean, what woman doesn't see herself as, you know, what others see? And wanting love and wanting to take care of someone. Josie has an incredible journey. One of the biggest journeys within, what is it, 20 hours is this play? It's, you know, literally, of how long this, what happens in between. And
no, our production is not 20 hours.
No, Kidman, no. It's really short. You'll love it.
It's solved. It spanned. The play spans 20 hours.
Thank you. But she, you know, and she's hard as nails and has these big walls and is able to, through Jim Tyrone is able to, and her father in a roundabout screwed up way is able to have those walls come down and in a sense and give what she knows she needs to give to Jim in order for him to die peacefully.
Neither one of you done an O'Neill play before?
I've done Long Day's Journey. I think that's the only one I've ever done.
I have not.
And it's interesting because the director said something that I experienced myself on this play, even though it's kind of raucous, you know, in the early stages, certainly. At the end, for reasons I didn't understand or know, I found myself crying. And this is just reading it. And then, because I was going to be in it, I read it again. And at the end, I found myself crying again. This time I knew it was going to happen very well. So it's interestingly moving. Even though it's, you know, even though it's an examination of things, and in many places it has a lighthearted feel to it. But I think this is a play that people will go home and talk about.
Brian Paulette plays the role mm-hmm. of James in the show. Mm-hmm. My usual question would be how does he fit in? I guess I sort of know, but I'd like to hear you talk about that.
How does he fit in? Well, he's the one who knows this family better than any of us, having done Long Day's Journey. He's played this character before. And
poor K-Cat.
Yes. And how does he fit into this? Well, he comes in and he's about to, the estate, right, is about to...
His mother and father have died.
Yes.
And he's inherited the estate, which is still in probate. But we're tenant farmers, so we don't know what's going to happen to mm-hmm. us when the estate settles.
But yet he's promised to us that we can buy it. But yet, when he gets crazy drunk, you never know what happens and what he may want. And we have to protect ourselves. So,
well, that puts you in a tenuous position mm-hmm. there.
And what does he want from Josie? And what does she want from him? And what do I want from him?
What do we need?
Sure.
That too.
Are those the only characters in the show?
There's two others. We have, in the beginning of the play, Mike, the youngest brother, is sent off. He literally is on for probably 10 minutes, but Josie helps him sneak off as she did for her other brothers.
Run away.
Yes, mm-hmm. because they can't handle being here with their father, and she helps them leave and takes the brunt of it from her father because she can handle him. And then there is our neighbor, Harder, played by Chris Rohde, comes in for
a
great...
Charlie Spillers?
Yes, Charlie Spillers is Mike. Okay. Lovely Charlie Spillers, who I get to beat up. And then Chris Rohde is Harder, who comes in his jockey pants, and...
He's the millionaire.
Yes.
He's the Standard Oil millionaire that has the estate next to theirs.
And hence the line that you had early in the show.
Oh. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
If we have any Standard Oil people in the audience, they won't be happy with my feelings about Standard Oil.
Well, O'Neill has a reputation. Yeah. Of the kind of plays he writes. I guess this fits right into that.
Well, he writes a lot of different kinds of plays. You know, you see a play or two and you think, oh, this is what O'Neill's about, and it's not. Harry or Anna Christie or Emperor Joe, very early plays are very, very different. I think I mentioned to you he wrote a nine-act play that had a dinner break, and because the audience was let out, this small cafe owner in Boston... became rich because he had them every night. And the story told me was that was Howard Johnson.
Speaking with Victor Rader Wexler, who plays the role of Philip Hogan, and Ashley Pankow, who plays the role of
Josie Hogan.
Josie Hogan in the Actors Theater production of A Moon for the Misbegotten. It opens on September the 12th and runs through the 30th. Performances are at the City Stage Theater of Union Station. Once again, the number to call for more information, 816-235-6222 or online at kcactors.org. Actors Theater is known for doing more gritty things. Well, they do some comedies, of course. But
Well, we just finished Blithe Spirit, mm-hmm. which is
well, that's
very
true.
Lovely,
and
funny.
And we did a mystery last year to kick off, the, yes. and then there were none. And following us, not at Union Station, but at UMKC Spencer Stage, we're doing a co-production with UMKC of Dracula.
Yeah.
that we've commissioned.
Yeah, commissioned. Yeah, oh, really?
A brand new script.
A brand new script.
Of Dracula.
Yeah, is John Rensenhaus directing?
He certainly is.
Yeah. He's played the role before.
He has, and I was hoping he'd play it again, but he chose to direct it. I think he sees Dracula as a younger man.
Oh, Dracula
I
is
don't.
Ageless.
Yeah.
Right?
Dracula is ageless. He might be 200 years old, but he's ageless. Actors Theater does do a variety of things. You're right about that. It started as kind of an offshoot, really, from the rep. Some of the actors wanted to start it and do their own thing.
They wanted to be a collective, to under control of their own destiny. I wasn't there then.
Yeah, literally started from scratch. That's a remarkable thing. And
still going. Yeah. We're now in the process of choosing season 15. And that's amazing that a collective mm-hmm. like this, we have no artistic director. You know, we have hired 1.5 people to do the business of the everything that we get goes into the productions, and we persist, and I think that's just incredible.
Yeah, do you get to do the kind of roles that you would always have liked to have done?
Well, I've gotten through KCAT. I've gotten to do roles that I might not have ever gotten to do otherwise. For me, the Gin Game, which is what brought me. I'm on the board now of director, because I wasn't then. But Dennis Hennessy said, when they asked him to do Gin Game, that he wanted to do it, if I would do it. And that brought me to the board. And I never would have gotten to do that. I never would have, you know, I'm Not Rappaport was a wonderful role, the role I did, and then there were none. This one is a great role. And we have to be a little careful about choosing plays for ourselves, but certainly I look at roles sometimes, and if I think it's a good play for us to do, I'll say, mm-hmm. What about doing, for example, I'm pushing The Price right now, Arthur Miller's play, because in the back of my mind there's a role that I would love to play.
Oh, I see.
But I have to be a little careful.
Well, of course. What about Ashley? Roles at Actors Theater and beyond, what kind of roles do you like the best? I'm guessing musicals, but
no,
I could be wrong.
You are wrong. No,
I'm wrong.
To me, I hate being put in a box and hate separating, because to me they're the same. You know what I mean? It's just a different way of saying words. You either sing them or you say them, and it's the same intention, same idea. But I was able to do Realistic Joneses last year with KCAT, and that was my first time, and I fell in love with the company and the play itself, Will Eno. And this is absolutely a dream role. I didn't even know it was a dream role. I didn't even think I could get it. I just wanted to read for something different than A Dumb Little Blonde. So, and lo and behold, here we are.
And I will tell you about Ashley. Is I'd seen her in this and that, including the Realistic Joneses, but she did the Million Dollar Quartet at the New Theater, and I went to see it, and she came in as Elvis Presley's girlfriend and sang Fever, the Peggy Lee song, and which was always one of my great. I thought, I'll never ever hear anybody else sing that song. I always just think of Ashley, because she can blow you out of the theater when her pipes get going.
Well, and I get to use that a little bit in our show. I get to yell at you a little bit.
Oh, you get
you
to
know?
Yell.
I've used the same diaphragm.
So the sound comes from the diaphragm.
Oh, well, it comes from it. Yeah,
people,
it's the same.
People think it's the chest.
It's everything. It's everything, but, you know, it's the same way that we speak is how we sing, you know, using the same technique. So it's just,
if you go to a karaoke night, and I've been to some of these places, people tend to sing, or they're they're trying to sing at a higher range than what is their natural range.
Well, sure.
What causes that to happen? What are they doing wrong?
Oh, all right. Here we go. They're singing from the throat as opposed to using different resonances in our head, but... Please, we don't need to get into that. I could talk forever on that.
Okay. Ashley teaches voice.
I do. I coach.
And ukulele, right?
Yeah, and piano and all, anything you want.
But you see people trying to sing higher than they actually should be singing.
Well, yes. They come to me and pay me to make them sound better, so yes.
Well, sure. Do you have a favorite role of all the parts that you've done and all the places that you've been?
This is topping it, I tell you right now. I was fortunate to do Next to Normal at Musical Theater Heritage 2 years ago, which is which is a different kind of musical, which
it
is about bipolar woman and her family and death of their son. But this is definitely top the charts right now, and I'm just trying to enjoy every moment with these lovely people.
And I saw Sister act at New Theater just a month or so ago. And there's this one role, and I knew who Ashley was, of the novitiate, and I said, "Who is that?" It was Ashley.
Sure, it was different.
I didn't recognize her at all.
I was in a nun habit, so we all kind of look the same.
Yeah, do you look for musicals first? You said you didn't want to be pigeonholed.
No, I mean, honestly, it's as an actor, you do want to do what you would like to do, but you also look at what's going to get you work. Too, because we're union actors. I need health insurance. I need my weeks. But that's exactly what this was. I just wanted to do something different, and lo and behold, it happened. So,
Victor has been mostly known, I suppose, for your comedy. I guess that's the correct way to put it. At least a lot of the things I've seen you do. But I'm sure you've done other non-comedic roles
that I haven't seen.
I mean, at least.
Because you've seen me on television.
That's right. Yeah.
I was 30 years in New York before I went out to California.
And you started as a stage manager, as I remember.
No, as a puppeteer. I did. I got to New York so green and so young, and looked in the New York Times want ads for actors' roles, and somebody was as stupid as I put one in there. Actors wanted character voices, puppeteers, Gramercy 36699, and I got and I started as a puppeteer. And you know, when you're young, I did a lot of Shakespeare festivals and a lot of stock companies, and it just keeps on evolving. And Ashley said it right. You go where somebody will pay you. Mm-hmm. You try for everything, and they're paying me for this. So I went to California, and I got lucky with the sitcoms. And so that's all, and a lot of them are still running. So that gave me some creds. But I was doing the other stuff, too.
I was flipping channels one night, and you showed up on a couple of different channels.
Yeah, my favorite role there was an angel, which was a spinoff of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
And I was a necromancer. I was somebody who put demons' bodies into demons into people's bodies. I loved it, and we did it.
Well, those shows have.
I'm going to find that.
Those shows have such a great following, but they're so surreal in many ways. Do you have to fight to keep the grin off your face sometimes?
No. Our textbook in college for acting was acting is believing. Mm-hmm. And it's simplistic, but it's true. And I get really upset if I can't make myself believe that I think I'm in trouble. Huh. And a lot of what rehearsal is about is getting yourself there so that you're not pretending. Mm-hmm. You're just there.
Now, the role in this, I would think, would be easy for you. But you mentioned earlier that you need some time to adjust and get into it.
So you think that an alcoholic Irishman would be easy for me. Thank you, Michael.
No offense was meant, but I would think you'd fall into that fairly easily.
He does. He's wonderful. He speaks like this, but it's... You just come see Victor, because it's so good.
It does open September 12th, not too far away, later this week, actually, at the City Stage Theater in Union Station, kcactors.org. You can make your arrangements online for that. any roles that you'd like to do? This is probably one of them, I guess, in the future that you would like to try and do.
Well, I mentioned the price.
Uh-huh.
But you know what's happened is I had a couple. For example, I always wanted to play Cyrano, always. And people would say, what do you want to play? We'll do a show. And I'd say Cyrano, and then I didn't get to do it. And eventually, I just was too old. And then I thought, well, I'll do De Guiche, who's an older character in the play. And then I got too old for that, too. So I got to be careful of, you know, roles I want to play, because some of them I can't play.
Well,
because, you know, I'd like to do Hamlet, but then I would have liked to have done what's his name, Stanley Kowalski, but out of the question. I mean, just there's roles you can't play, and you have to look in the mirror and say, well, you know, that's a thought. So I don't know what'll come up. I know that following this, I'm going to do one in at Rep and in D.C., and it's a wonderful role.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But I'm still the same. Go where who will pay you, and maybe, you know, someday kick back. I'm doing some cartoons, too, for Netflix and DreamWorks. So.
Oh, the voices?
Uh-huh.
Is that... Do you feel as creative when you do that?
No, I don't feel as creative at doing anything other than stage. Stage is the most creative I think we get to be. It's what brought me back out of Hollywood and back here. And, you know, this is much, much, much more satisfying. And you play with some. I mean, here I am. This is my first show with Ashley Pankow.
Yeah.
We met after shows a couple of times when friends, and we'd go out and have a drink together, you know, with friends of the cast, and so I got to meet her a couple of times. But this is really a treat, because she is one of the gifts that Kansas City has.
Victor plays the role of Philip Hogan. Ashley Pankow plays the role of Josie Hogan, his daughter, in the Kansas City Actors Theater production of A Moon for the Misbegotten, a Eugene O'Neill drama. Runs September 12th through the 30th at the City Stage Theater in Union Station. Number to call for more information, 816-235-6222, or online. And isn't it convenient these days when all these theaters, you can make your arrangements online, kcactors.org. I want to thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you, Michael.
It was nice to have you.
Letting us come and, you know, and just John.
Oh, sure. And time goes so quick.
Can you believe actors liking to talk about themselves? I mean, who would have thought?
Yeah, who would have thought? Yeah. Victor Rader Wexler plays the role of Philip Hogan, and Ashley Pankow, who plays the role of Josie Hogan, his daughter, in the Actors Theater production of A Moon for the Misbegotten. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a break. Then we return. We'll have much more for you. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey not too far down the street.
Half a block.
We're at 39th and Main. The Warwick Theater is at 3927 Main, and that is the new home of the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, where they are opening their new season. It is the 14th season. Boy, that hardly seems possible, Bob, that it's been 14 seasons.
It's all gone by in a flash.
In a flash. And they are opening their new season. They're doing The Odd Couple by the late, now late, Neil Simon. And with us to tell us all about it is, of course, Bob Paisley, the director. Bob is also an actor at times. He performs in a lot of things. Also with him, Scott Cordes, who plays the role of Oscar Madison in the show. Scott has performed in many places. I've seen him do some outstanding work at the Unicorn, Actors Theater, American Heartland Theater. And Scott's also directed at places as well.
Oh, yeah.
Places where...
The theater in this town is fantastic, and I love to be a part of it. I just love it.
So glad to have... Oh, and Tony Beasley is with us as well. He has performed at the Met, and he seemed, when I talked to him, to stress his stage managing work.
I did, sure.
Is this your first actual professional role?
This is the largest part I've ever done. The Paisleys have given me a chance to be in musicals, but usually I come out... four pages, kind of run around the stage, do a figure eight, and then leave. This is something that has weight to it. This is the weightiest role I've had.
Weighty? Well, it's certainly an interesting play. I wouldn't say it's a weighty play, exactly.
Well, there is something very classic about this thing, and weighty, and the the characters have become so iconic in our culture, and that's evident in the all the different versions of this play, which have been made. There's, you know, we were talking earlier about the female version, and there was a, on television there was a black version. They made a an Odd Couple Part Two film a long time ago as well. So the genesis of this is, and that makes Neil Simon an American classic playwright, along with Arthur Miller and Edward Albee. So this is a, yeah, it's part of the strong American canon.
Do you think they all had drinks together sometime?
Oh, yeah,
you hope so. Sit around and listen to that conversation.
Oh, that would have been an interesting conversation, wouldn't it? But you're doing The Odd Couple. It opens your 14th season. What kind of offerings do you have during the season?
We've got some very intriguing work to be done. We're opening with Odd Couple. We follow it up in October with The Orphan's Home Cycle. This is an amalgamation of many plays by the late playwright Horton Foote, and it tells the story of Horton Foote's father growing up in South Texas. The cycle is really a trilogy of plays. There are three full-length evenings that You see part one, part two, and part three, and it covers 30 years of this man's life, 30, 40 years. It's an incredible, deep, moving piece. As you know, Horton Foote also wrote Trip to Bountiful, and so his style is really thick within this play. And we'll be doing it, and it will be only the second full production of this play ever in the country. It was done once by Hartford Stage, and they took it on to do an off-Broadway version of it for a little while. And that's the only time it's ever been produced, aside from us.
In January, you're going to do Chekhov,
yes.
The Cherry Orchard.
Yes, this is our second Chekhov that has been translated by Tom Stoppard. And so it's a beautiful thing. Todd Lanker will be directing that, and I can't wait to see that on stage. We also have, later in the spring, in April, the North American premiere of Stephen King's novel, The Shawshank Redemption. This play was written by a friend of mine in Ireland, and it debuted in Dublin, and then went on to the Edinburgh Festival, a UK tour, and a West End run in London. But here we're going to get a chance to do this for the first time in North America. In April, and so we're lucky to have a couple of really strong premieres, national premieres here.
But you're starting out with The Odd Couple by Neil Simon. It is said, at least when Mr. Simon passed away within the last few weeks, it is said that certain aspects of his life were included in his plays. Like Chapter 2 was his divorce from Marcia Mason. The Odd Couple was something. There was always something.
Well, I can imagine that, you know, living in New York, you're going to run across all kinds of people and things. I don't know enough of his history to say what it might represent, but this was early on. This was originally mid-60s, 1965, I think it was originally produced. So there's a lot of history in a lot of his plays.
It's a beautiful written piece, too. It's very funny. The way it's put together, the way it's crafted, it's just hilarious.
Scott plays the role of Oscar Madison.
Yes.
And I guess it's hard not to copy the actors known for playing it before. How do you do it different from Jack Klugman or from Walter Matthau? You must have a way you want to put your own mark on it.
Oh, like always, I just, you know, tell the story. Start with what's on the page and build from there. I don't know the performances from other actors who have played him that well. I mean, I've come across and, you know, maybe seen a movie or so. But usually just start with the script and the words and build from there.
Now, Tony plays Felix Unger.
Felix, yes.
You play him as a... Oh, I've seen different versions of it. He was a photographer, a weatherman. How do you do it? As a photographer?
Well, the Felix I play writes news for CBS.
Oh, okay.
And that's just I know because it's in the script.
Okay.
So I go along with that. But it's absolutely great. I mean, I love to be able to play. I also think Felix Unger is like the first urban neurotic that has been kind of put onto the American stage, and it's just a real honor and a blessing, especially in the bittersweet time when it's with his passing. It's given me even more time to kind of enjoy and relish and have a good time with this character.
A story about men and divorce and getting together. For anyone who doesn't know the story, Felix's wife throws him out.
Throws him out, and he is despondent and distressed, and he goes to his friend Oscar,
who's just been divorced for 6 months, and he has this big apartment with
big
eight
apartment.
Rooms. Eight empty
yeah.
rooms and in New York City. And so he invites Felix.
Felix needs guidance, so
yes.
he turns to Oscar.
And we are friends from way back,
yeah.
and so I ask him to live with me. That's the first mistake I made. The man is insane.
Yeah, the show is known for its poker games,
yeah.
yes.
simulated poker games. Who are some of the gentlemen involved in that?
Our poker players are rounded out with Andy Penn and Bill Pelletier.
Oh, Pelletier. Well, he has a great voice.
He is.
These guys are great.
And Larry Goodman and Curtis Smith are the poker players. And the girls, the Pigeon Sisters.
Cuckoo!
Cuckoo.
That's
cuckoo
right.
Pigeon Sisters are Rebecca Ralston and Nicole Hall. And we're having a great
this
time.
It's a great ensemble. It's a great cast.
And what we really realized through rehearsals is that as long as we don't get in the way of the words, it's going to be great.
It's live.
Mm-hmm. Out of the way of the words. What do you mean by that, Bob?
Well, sometimes we catch each other acting when we really shouldn't be.
yeah. Sometimes you can let the music just take over. I have a tendency to want to overthink, overdelve, try to dissect the piece too much. And sometimes Mr. Simon did such a good job of writing it, you almost need to just let the current take you and just flow with his words.
Mr. Madison is so nice to let you move in.
He's a good guy.
You feel the need to improve his life.
Well, I think Felix can't really help except to tidy up a little bit. That's his contribution for saying thank you.
He helps me save money because I have to pay alimony.
Save money, rearrange the furniture.
Be in at home now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Felix.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, they have certain challenges, but those are moments of comedy in
Absolutely.
The show. You're a gourmet cook.
And Absolutely.
Does it actually save Oscar money?
Oh, sure.
Oh,
we
yeah.
have two meals a day at home. We save a fortune. We have to start paying alimony.
That's right.
So,
leg of lamb.
Felix comes with he's got his intentions in a good place. He comes with a good heart. He's got the vision. He wants everything to work out positively and smoothly. So,
but living with him after 3 weeks, I'm having a nervous breakdown.
This is true.
Are things just too perfect, Scott?
He makes me feel guilty for not, I don't know, picking up my towels
or
burning holes in the couch with my cigar. And he's just always there. He always has something to say. And what's worrying me is I'm beginning to listen.
There you go.
Oscar is a sports writer.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
a New York sports writer.
One of the best ones in the country.
That's yeah. a different kind of life than certainly what Felix has had.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we're both journalists. We both write. That's maybe where we met. Maybe we went to school together and became good friends. He's probably my first dorm mate.
Yeah.
And
there comes a time.
I learned to love the guy.
There comes a time of confrontation involving Oscar wants to get some female companionship, and I guess maybe Felix isn't ready for that.
Not at all. He needs a little more time, a couple more weeks.
There's no time left.
What is that line about if I don't get my hands...
Well, if I don't touch something soft the next 3 weeks, I'm in big trouble.
That's right. That's one of the better lines in the show.
Oh, there's a million of them.
Oh, yeah. We're speaking with, not the entire cast, but the two main guys in the cast of The Odd Couple by Neil Simon. Scott Cordes plays the role of Oscar Madison. Tony Beasley plays the role of Felix Unger. It's directed, of course, by Bob Paisley. He's... here as well. It opens on Thursday, September 13th, later this week, at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, now at the Warwick Theater, 39-27 Main. The number to call for more information, 816-569-3226, or you can go online at metkc.org. That's a story within itself. I know you want to talk about the play, but finding the Warwick, redoing the Warwick, would you like to share maybe a shortened version
of
all that?
Well, I'll give you a quick update on where we are. We moved in for our first show last March when we first got there, and it's been a an ongoing process getting the building ready for performance. We did have two shows in there from last season as we wrapped up in our gala fundraiser. And so we're getting ready now for the first full season. And as we begin to get the space ready, we'll be able to have more seats in it soon. We'll have the bar in the lobby will be tricked out as best it can be. And we are continuing our renovation process as we go along. We have the capital campaign underway, and the renovations will be done over the course of the season.
Do you have a web page where they can donate, be part of the capital campaign?
Sure, absolutely. Come on to our website at metkc.org, and you can find out all the information about the work, and you can donate there to help us make a difference in this community here. We're helping renovate this lovely section of Midtown, and we feel like we're really in the heart of it here at where Westport Road slams into Main Street. You can't get much more in the middle of it than that. Yeah. And we're honored to help offer this community another venue that not only our theater can use, but other theaters and other performing agencies in town as well.
Yeah, you're real close to the Unicorn. Not too far away from the Unicorn Theater. And it's been in that location a long time. And then you're joining. What was the biggest problem? The Warwick had been empty for a long time. Obviously.
But there was no heat and no cooling in it. And you can't really, in the middle of winter, go into some place that just doesn't have it going there. And so by happenstance, we happened upon this fella whose first job when he became a heating and cooling guy was to work on the boilers of the Warwick Theater back in the mid-70s. So when we couldn't get in and our old space that we were at 36th and Main, when it started really falling apart, we had Eric Kilschus come in. He said, I can get this fixed for a drop in the bucket. And all of a sudden we had heat in the building. And the city had told us that we were still authorized as a cinema because of the old cinema. So we were able to step right in and immediately start producing, which is what we really needed to happen for us.
Yeah, it had movies. Were there ever stage performances there?
I don't believe so.
Was it a vaudeville house? Somebody told me at one time it was a vaudeville
house. I think it tried to have a couple of different lives. Built in 1912 as a 1,000-seat cinema. And then stopped being a cinema on a regular basis in 1953. After that, in the 60s, I think it had a couple of tries to do a couple of different things. But Larry Sells bought the building in the mid-70s, and in order to showcase his furniture store that he wanted, he renovated the building and probably actually saved it. It was in pretty sad shape at that point. And though there's nothing historic necessarily behind the facade, at least the building is still there. And we're able to repurpose it back to what it was originally designed for, which was the entertainment industry.
I've only seen the pictures that you've posted. It looks like it's a bigger stage. Is it actually?
It will be when we finish our renovations in there. We'll average somewhere about between 150 and 250 seats once we get all the options in there available to us. But like I said, it's still a work in progress, and as we grow with it, we'll make it our own as in time. I mean, we've only been there now for 6, 7, 8 months. We were 10 years where we were before.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes. That amount of time sometimes to make it your home.
Yeah, in most of the confrontations of what I saw at your place at 36, mm-hmm. We were very close to the performers, and we were on three sides of the performers. Now, this is a more traditional style. Does it change the way you direct or the shows that you pick?
Well, happily, the renovations that were done in the building allow us to do the same style of theater that we've been doing for the past 10 years, only on a slightly larger scale. So we will constantly keep rearranging the space to suit the play, and the staging will have various options, and we hope to offer those ideas and those opportunities to other groups as well.
Scott is a busy performer. Where will you be going after this one wraps up, Scott?
I have a show coming up at the Kansas City Rep of Mice and Men. I'm playing Carlson. He shoots the dog.
Yes. That's a very that's a very heavy drama.
Oh, it's beautiful. I just read the book again the other day, and man, that is well put together.
See, those are good roles for you. I hearken to other ones you've played. Of course, I suppose my favorite was the one you did at American Heartland Theater. You play the guy who helped write and directed Gone with the Wind. That was very good.
That was a great play. Yeah. I enjoyed doing that. That was a good cast.
You were extremely believable in that role as well. You've also did some dark side roles over the years.
Oh, yeah. I've played a lot of different characters from... rapist. A lot of different characters.
Now you direct as well.
Yep,
sometimes.
I direct around town.
What is the most fulfilling? You love to act.
I love to act. Yeah. I mean, directing's great too. Because you get to do it all. You're responsible for the show. So, but I love acting. I love telling stories.
The one you did, was it at the Living Room? The two professors.
Yeah,
that was good as well.
Right. Trigger Happy by Ron Simonian.
Yes, it's a Simonian play. Yeah, you covered both sides of a very hot topics. Mm-hmm. Very surprising.
I love working at the Living Room. I directed down there and acted down there.
Yeah, you also do film work.
Yeah, I've done some film.
What would you like to say about that?
Well, it's a different kind of art form, definitely, because I shot one film called Belong to Us that we shot over 3 summers. That means I had to have my facial hair was like 10 days of growth, and I had to have a certain haircut, and I had to repeat that over 3 summers. But you watch the film, you can't tell.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what's so amazing about it.
It sure is. And Tony, is going back to stage manager. Are you more comfortable doing that, or do you want to continue to be an on-stage person?
I really do enjoy both equally. I think stage managing, I have a tendency to have organization in my head. So I do kind of enjoy the process of getting to work with the designers of sound and costume and lights and box office and this and that and kind of collaborate with all these different designers. It's a good thing for me to act, though, because it reminds me how to speak to actors as a stage manager. And I believe anyone in the theater should put their foot in the water of different areas.
Sure.
So acting to me is a good thing because it helps me become a stronger person in the theater.
Now, Bob also runs Central Standard Theater, and occasionally you have British actors, performers come over, and you put on shows involving them.
Yeah, well, I've been lucky enough that over the past 10 years, I've made connections to the international theater festivals in Edinburgh and Adelaide, Australia, and the opportunity to not only take Kansas City shows to the world, but to be able to bring these other performers from around the world to Kansas City is a great thrill for us and for them too. When they come to Kansas City, they're coming to America and they're looking for barbecue and jazz and cowboys and the Wizard of Oz. I mean, and that's all here. New York is New York, L.A. is L.A. But when they want the real stuff, they're happy to come here. And on my visits overseas, if I don't show up with a couple of bottles of Gates barbecue sauce and Boulevard beer, they don't let me stay.
Artistically speaking, what's the biggest difference? The British sense of humor, to me, seems to be different. You have your Monty Python style humor. You have your Noel Coward style humor, and there are others in there too.
Well, I don't know. I think it goes back to it being their language in the first place, and they're so experienced with how to use the language. I think that gives them a leg up on a lot of what we do. But I think you'll find as much physical comedy and slapstick on this side of the pond as you do over there. I know that they really appreciate our stuff. just as much as we appreciate what they have to give us.
It wasn't it Churchill who said the British and the Americans are two peoples separated by a common language?
You can't. Yeah, you can't make that up. That's right.
So let's fill in the rest of the season. You mentioned several of the shows. You didn't talk about Seven Guitars by
Seven
August
Guitars.
Wilson.
August Wilson. This is another of his decades-long look at the African-American experience, and this will be our fourth out of the 10 plays.
Now, is this also set in the Pittsburgh area?
Yes, it is, the Hill District there, and we're looking forward to another great performance with that. We did Piano Lesson and Jitney, and what else? We did one more.
Gem of the Ocean.
Gem of the Ocean was the one last year. So we've done Fences as well. So this is another one of the we're really looking forward to having that done. We're also doing our Christmas show, which is
It's a Wonderful Life.
And it's a radio version where you have. You have the Foley and the sound effects happening on stage as they tell the story.
People get to see how radio was done.
Absolutely.
Back in those days. Oh, don't forget City of Angels.
Oh, City of Angels. Our final show of the season is the musical, which is just so sharp. It's a jazz-fueled soundtrack and a great story So a lot of style, and we'll really enjoy that.
The season is kicking off down there with The Odd Couple. It opens up this Thursday, September 13th, runs through the 23rd at the Warwick Theater, 3927 Main. If you MapQuest things, you need the zip code 64111. You can call 816-569-3226 or go online to metkc.org. The Metropolitan Ensemble Theater continues in its 14th season. They're now at the Warwick Theater, and hopefully, you're probably hoping we'll be there for a long, long time.
I'm not moving again.
That's always an ordeal.
This is the final one.
Thanks so much, all of you, for being with
us. Michael, it's a pleasure.
Thank you,
Bob. Bob Paisley, the director. He's also an actor in his own right. Scott Cordes plays the role of Oscar Madison. You've seen him at many theaters around town. Great to have him. And Tony Beasley. We'll see you in other roles in the future.
I hope so.
And I will remind you of your role as Felix Unger in the show. Thanks so much for being with us. The Jazz Insiders next. Great jazz. We're going to have jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.